Okay, good morning, everybody. This is our workshop. We're going to start. It's 9:30 in the morning. Today is May 10th. Everybody know about the power going to go out tomorrow? For the day.
Tomorrow.
The 11th. Yeah, I like it.
Is that definite? The whole city, or how's that? Is that stepwise? What does that mean?
They're moving a house.
Yeah.
So they're going to take it down.
I see. Yeah. So it's kind of rolling, somewhat unpredictable.
So today we're going to be talking a lot about benchmarks, where we want to be, projects, and funding situations. And we've got lots of hieroglyphics on the wall. I like that. Sam, good. Keeping the tape business going.
That's right.
So I'm going to pass it off to you.
Great.
And let you take us through it.
Awesome. And I have requested from the commission that we as the staff need full engagement from the commission. Not that you aren't always fully engaged, but that we reserve any public comment to towards the end, so we can just really focus and run through critical path first, and then some of the framing on the IDD and stuff, and going to get you up and out of your chairs, as, oh, here comes the rest of our staff. So, gentlemen, if you'll join me.
Oh, interactive. I feel too good.
You're welcome to look. I'm just going to reserve any questions and come to comment at the end. So, we're working a lot on building, Gantt charts and dependencies, and how we're moving a lot of initiatives down the field. This is a simplified version of really some key milestones. And so we are looking at both the Point Hudson planning, the jetty project, how the IDD is moving forward, what we need to do for bonding, and what our budget process is, and how these things all relate to each other. And in particular, I want to get some critical path elements in here of what needs to happen first before we can reach some other key milestones. So I'll point out some things in each of these, and then I'll run through kind of the schedule for each of the elements. Note some things like, wow, you can see there's a lot happening right here in a very compressed time frame. And then we'll kind of circle back around and do the critical path at the end. Shooting for now, we're still not quite under contract with Walt Foster or Longhi. I have that for you in the regular business meeting. I've refined that, as well as what the domino that needs to fall before that is the CURB grant. And they are processing their grants, and we're in the pile, and I think it's just, we'll get it when we get it. We're still shooting for a June 1st start off. What I've added is to have them come and do a kickoff meeting with the commission. And I think it's important for the consultants to hear from you directly as a body. So as they go out and do the rest of the work, they're going to know what you as the commission are looking for, at least some bookends on that. Through this, there's a whole lot of other things in here. Interview with stakeholders, looking at land use constraints, a lot of the market assessment analysis. They're going to crank through this very quickly, come back with just some conceptual ideas for you to consider and give some feedback on in July. We have an update from just our staff. We won't have Maul Foster. We'll just let you know how we're proceeding in August. Then at the end of September, bringing the recommended alternative to the commission. They will also have some conceptual drawings at this point. So they'll have some artist renderings of, like, this is what the property, the uses that it can do. We will then turn around. It's been recommended to me from David Timmons that we take these ideas, not for approval or anything, but take them to the Historic Preservation Committee as well as the Planning Commission. So if this in particular looks to have any need for any type of changes to the code or the shoreline, the local code or the shoreline management plan. We'll note these. We don't know if that's the case until we come up with what the recommended alternative, and really that's going to be based upon the market assessment, etc. Take these two, and more than a courtesy stop, we're really drawing upon their expertise. So, you know, particularly, both of them will be able to help us with some what pitfalls there may be in the alternative, what solutions there may be. We then have a community meeting scheduled, an open house. What I didn't show on here, I'm not quite sure where I did show up, is that we're actually planning on having a some type of a booth or set up at the Wooden Boat Festival too, so that we'll have a way to gather input from not only our community but the broader community that comes to us, you know, annually. Have community meeting. After all of this, you will have heard input from a wide array of stakeholders and things. Come back and have you select the alternative. Now, you will have a recommended alternative in front of you. By the selected alternative, I mean you can just be slightly modifying the alternative that presented, or if we really heard, you know, this is not going to fly for some reason, then we're at a decision point of what's the backup plan here. After that, going right into the joint port and city meeting, and from there coming into a draft memorandum of understanding. We'll have some time before we actually get to a draft or a memorandum of understanding or some type of development agreement. Not sure exactly what form that this type of documentation that shows agreement between the two public entities that we can have some assurances that as we move forward with expending dollars that with the change in city councils and things that will happen over time, that there's some agreements between the agencies themselves, the local governments themselves. Okay, so that's, in a very simplified nutshell, the planning process.
So a question. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the two public agencies. As Kate likes to remind us, you know, we're part of the county too, so I assume that they're included in all of this.
They will be included to some degree. And the interesting thing about it, they will absolutely be included, as well other stakeholders. What is particularly noting this is because the city is the land use authority for this. And so it's important that we have that joint understanding that's memorialized. So there'll be other people that have lots of input and hopefully ownership of this as we move along.
And one other thing, since the granting people, CURB, I'm sure they're aware that all the stuff's waiting on them to start. Have they given you any indication of how far down the pile it is?
They've not. I just called them yesterday again and even, you know, asked them, hey, can we maybe get a little bit of an early start? And I just haven't heard back from them. Yeah. They
have something where I should call my.
I don't know, Eric. They were pretty. I mean, they indicated mid-May to early, you know, very beginning June. And if there is, I've not worked with CURB a lot. Certainly, their grant application process has been very, very clockwork and very. They seem to be very efficient. Eric, do you have anything to add on our expectations of having that signed contract pop out?
I don't think they're behind schedule.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it would be, right about now, would be about as early as one would reasonably expect the grant being approved.
Yeah. I'll continue to follow up with them. If I think there's any red flags, I'll let you know on that. Okay, any other questions on kind of general process and some of the milestones for planning? Okay. Then for the jetty, the first one is that we're already working to get a consultant to take us to 100% design. We're about at 60% design right now. That's what got us our permits. We have our permits in hand. We then need to go through 100% design and get big bid documents. We'll get to 90% design, which will then lead to our engineering estimate, and want to go out to bid at the very end of this year. So we'll have, and I want to talk about kind of the critical path between some of these, but that's just like get the contract finished, get documents ready to go, get out to bid. This all leads towards an award date sometime in February, and a start date in July 15th, which is the opening of the fish window. Okay. It's not going to be easy.
So any conversations about emergency planning or some sort of a backup just in the event that we have a failure come this fall?
We are we're looking at that, as I've talked with many of you, having been out on opening day and going by. I think many of us have noticed, like, wow, it has deteriorated a lot in the last year. Look at everything from just want to see if there's any hazards in the channel, and then I think we do need to talk about, you know, the what ifs, what happened if we had some type of failure in the interim. So. We're absolutely going to move forward on that, and that's when we get our consultant on board. We'll talk with them about that as well.
What's the anticipated construction period?
For the south wall would be July 15th of 18 through February 1st, Eric, February 15th of 18. I think that's the fish window. Thereabouts.
So Jake just walked in.
Huh?
Question is, what about wooden boat?
What about wooden boat? What about wooden boat, Jake?
We can talk about it later. But
we can talk about that later, and it's certainly one of the things that we can work with the consultant on. Is there construction sequencing that we can do to where we can have the channel open and available for the festival? Can we, you know, we'll definitely have that as part of our bid document for preparation.
And the costs associated with demobbing and so on to make it open for that?
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Yep. And, you know, that's those.
Well, and you can't go into winter without a breakwater there. So you're going to have something established before the end of the county.
Right.
Where you're going to have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we got a lot of construction sequencing to do, and that will be everything with, you know, effects upon traffic, as well as just, you know, noise and outreach to our tenants, you know, other things. There'll definitely be a lot of construction sequencing and project management of how do we not only keep the project going, but how do we keep the interface with our neighbors and keep people in the loop. Okay. Then looking at IDD development, and we'll turn to that next. What we're looking for is not in this session, because we don't make decisions in the workshop, but at the regular session this afternoon for the commission to give staff direction to begin the process of preparing the findings and the resolution, so we can embark upon the formal process of adopting an IDD. There are things in here, like I'm going to recommend to the commission that you that if you proceed with the IDD, that you do the boundary of it before the entire county. Regardless of what the boundary is, the levy would apply to the entire county. And I believe that our findings will support that there are marginal lands throughout the county, so that we can make that the boundary. It gives us more flexibility as to where then we can do projects. We would then look to be having a public hearing in July, at the end of July for the IDD. And then, that's wrong. Public hearing here in August, and IDD adoption in early September. Not quite sure what this is. The draft resolution. So So looking for August hearing and then adoption but the next meeting. So general time frame for that. Sound okay? Again, we'll and then we continue to coordinate with the assessor. There will be a lot of work up front on that. We will also need to employ bond counsel on this and to help us work with the assessors so that we can actually work through all the detailed mechanics of how this would go into play. The bonding capacity, and this is just for the jetty process, we need to engage bond counsel on this and update our bonding capacity, both for our general obligation bonding capacity as well for our revenue bonds. It's been, you know, what our bonding capacity is for use for the jetty. You know, we're going to be looking at general obligation bonding capacity here, and so that is limited. As you well know, and so if
when you say jetty, you mean just the south jetty?
Just the south jetty first, yes. Mm-hmm. Though we have, as we have applied, and we did get the application in, that would be the Royal We, because that was really Eric that did it. They got the application in for the big tier two. We were hoping for maybe a gap year in there to do the south jetty, have a year, and then do the north jetty. And they said, nope, you need to, if you're going to apply for this, it needs to be right the year after. So if we get funding from that, we will be obligated by that schedule to then be the season of 19-20. So again, same fish window, July 15 to February something. 15. So we need to update our bonding capacity. We then need to begin the bond process of actually going out and putting this on the market sometime in November. It takes about 3 months. We need to be able to have the bonding proceeds available to us by the same time that we award the contract. So that's then we're starting to get into our critical path.
Why is that?
Why is that? Because we don't have the money in hand to pay for the contract unless we have those proceeds available. So we won't be able to let the contract until we have assurances that we have the funds available through the bond.
Unless we get the grants. We're going to have some grant capacity. When we do the award, I would think.
No, for the south. So the additional grants will apply to the north jetty.
Okay.
So right now we have, in rough numbers, estimate of 3.8 million for the south jetty on its own, and in hand over 1.1. So we have a gap of $2.7 million for that south jetty.
It seems a bit worrisome that those two dates are aligned.
Yeah. We could start this bond process back a little bit earlier, but I want to go through some other critical path on that. And then finally our budget process. We start steps, in the summer where we start, cranking through things together. We'll have some previews with you in workshop, but really looking at bringing you a draft budget commission sometime in October that you would actually have a public hearing and adoption of that. And we typically do that the first or the second meeting in November. Like to do it on the first. If there's any type of modification you want to make after the hearing, then we do have that safety valve of being able to do that in the second week. And that's always the Tuesday before Thanksgiving.
When is the fish window?
Fish window, July 15th to February 15th.
So it closes. You can't do any construction after February 15th?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep. As we know, there are some inefficiencies with breaking the projects up apart into north and south because we've got MOB and DMOB on there. However, there's also the possibility that we will have the award from the big tier two that would offset that inefficiency and give us some more federal dollars to do it. We won't know until March of 2018 whether or not we are queued up for an award for that program. And probability of us getting that is hard to say at this point. We do have, we've been working with that's U.S. Fish, right?
Initially we work closely with Carl Jacobs, mm-hmm. RCO, and he's in close coordination with Paul Haven and U.S. Fish Portland.
So,
this is great, Sam. It's nice to see it on the wall.
Okay, so let's walk through some critical path things. And, you know, Brad already picked up on one. I'd say the we can look at, before we actually go out to bid, do we have agreement from the city of what type of plan we can move forward to actually make the property sustainable. But if we move back here look at, you know, where is it that we are looking to, we need to set the IED levy rate, and that will need to happen, and we'll roll through some of those numbers here next. But so as we look at how we're actually going to pay for the jetty, we'll be looking at the grant that's available, the bonding capacity that we have available, and if there's funds available from the IED. So those are the three things that will be coming in to get us to that approximately $3.8 million. Now, I also want to say these are planning level estimates, and I'm going to say that about 1,000 times today. And guaranteed, somebody's going to say you went over budget because it's $3.9 million, and you know that's just going to happen. But these are estimates until we get to this engineering estimate, which is really when the engineer stamps and says this is what I think you can expect to get bids in on that. That, of course, is no guarantee, because it is about the market and about our location. The engineers should be taking that into account, what mobilization looks like over here, what material transport looks like over here. But if people are busy, then the prices could be much higher than the engineering estimate.
For a project that size, contingency is what, 10%?
10-15%, yeah. For planning, we go higher. I think we've been considered 20%, and just for planning level. So we've got that built into that
3.8.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It seems like these two, we're paying these guys money mm-hmm. to figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like these two guys would end up here talking, these people would be talking to these people.
Absolutely.
Before we get to this.
Absolutely.
It's not like you want to unroll something and they suddenly say, oh.
They go, what? We've never seen this before. No.
So I don't really like the part where you say, well, we might get to here and we might have to change it because these guys decided we needed to change it.
Yes. That would be a very bad outcome if we got to this point. By the time we get here, we really, I mean, that is the whole intent of, I would say the whole intent. It is a major objective of the planning process, is to do the analysis, look at the market assessment, look at the land use, really what is possible, but then also how does that fit in with the community expectations? Because if we come up with an idea that absolutely works for the port and the port's bottom line, but the community is thumbs down all the way over, then we're just dead in the water. So, yes, these are more, I don't want to call them formalities. They're They are a somewhat of a courtesy, but I think recognizing that they do have expertise, and we're circling back around to them one more time.
Is it true that our prevailing wage rate is higher than Pilum County because we're tied to Seattle?
I believe that is the case, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the size of that difference?
You know, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way we could talk about that with someone? I mean, a project this size, that could be a substantial amount of money. If
those are all set by this will actually be Davis-Bacon, right? Because we're federal dollars on this, so they're set by the Davis-Bacon Labor Board.
Well, whatever marine construction company gives, I mean, they're already far above those rates anyway.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah,
you know, they're for the pile box union,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah. Yeah, it is one of the things that I like to note when we talk about, you know, what our cost and what our revenue structure should be, is that, you know, we do not enjoy any type of cost savings on capital projects. When in fact, oftentimes our prices are elevated because material transport is higher for here. It really depends upon the project, but you can't say, oh, we're a small town, things should be lower. That is just not the way the capital projects market works. I think there's a couple key components here. One is, you know, again, we'll have done a lot of pre-work on this. We should not be hitting, and this is the joint court and city meeting, we should not be hitting, this will not be a cold call meeting. You know, people will be familiar with the concepts, they will, you know, will have them fully briefed. This will really be about, you know, what are the kind of the terms of the agreement that we can get to, and what's the necessary form of that agreement, and so that the legislative bodies can give direction to staff to memorialize it. So I think, you know, really we should be, you know, back in here somewhere where we really have a lot of buy-in on how we're proceeding. And by this, you know, we've purposely kept this concept open. It includes things like other governance structures. You know, we're going to be looking at, you know, partnerships, what kind of participation from the private market we could look at. So this alternative is not just about the use. It's also about, you know, how the organization is going to relate to other organizations to do what needs to be done. And so by the time we get to here, and the thing is, you know, we need to have it in our capital budget and into a budget to you. So as we look here, this is really kind of a critical path as well. Is we need some direction from the commission at this point to say, yeah, okay, proceed forward. We're on our track to bonding. We're also then looking here about you know, what the design, what the estimate is, and what we actually need to put into our capital budget. So, you know, this is going down for a critical path as well. The IDD, this adoption of the resolution doesn't, You do not need to identify the exact dollar amount or the exact projects that that you would spend the IDD proceeds on. You know, we're going to present those concepts because we just, you know, you've indicated that that's something that you want to do. It's a good idea, but we do need to say, okay, what's our amount going? So before we go to the assessor, we need to have this here as well. So we need to know what our budget is, and then what we're going to turn the IDD on so that we can get the proceeds. for this, if we're counting on that, and if we're going to bond against it, or if we're going to try to get cash from it. And as it goes out, if we look at bringing the IDT on, for example, at the highest mill rate, then we would expect our first payment from the IDD, from the assessor, to be transferred somewhere in the June, July of 2018. I'm looking at Abigail. That's where this is. It's new territory, so we're not sure exactly how it's going.
Right.
That
comes in the same way that regular expenses come in. So April and October are the two big months that get hit. Mm-hmm. But it comes throughout the year.
Right. Okay. Right.
So we have a meeting, so we're at the conference next week. I'm assuming at some point we're going to have a discussion with bond counsel on our reserve and making sure that our reserve is protected, and you know, we keep that reserve, our interest rates stay low.
Yeah.
And that's right there. Okay.
Yeah. Right. So, we're going to be looking at bringing them on for both the IDD and, you know, bonding for the project. So,
and they're really going to play a large voice in the overall cash flow of the project.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to want to know that they're safe.
Yeah. And as well as, again, our revenue bonding capacity is not going to be available to us for this project, because the project's not going to produce any revenue. We're going to be looking at our general obligation capacity and IDD capacity, if the commission adopts that. So as we look here, you can see that before we get down to here, we've got some key decision points to be, so there's going to be some things going into the budget, some things going into engaging with our bond council before we really get to this joint city port meeting. So that's, again, why this cannot be hitting people cold in here. We need to have a really good indication that we are going to get to agreement here. And that's, in all of my years of capital projects and public processes, this is a super compressed time frame. So we need to, meeting with Jake and Dave Timmons regularly, we're just trying to lay everything out so people are not surprised by this calendar that we're putting out and saying, okay, expected. It's going to, once we get to decision points, it's going to be, every couple weeks, there's going to be some key inputs and key decision points. So we'll have our public hearing and adoption of our budget about the same time that we have this joint meeting. Now, I think it is how we talk about our organization's capacity to pull off this project is super important, because I don't think that any of us want to be using language that sounds like an ultimatum, but I think we need to be really, really frank with that. We do not have the bonding capacity to do the entire project with our limited general obligation money. And we just do not have it. Do we have it if we have the IDD? Possibly. Then it's like, how much of that IDD bonding proceeds that you want to dedicate to a project that, again, will not return any revenue directly to the organization? Does it return value to the organization and the town? Absolutely. No. But then there's that point of what's the leverage and use of the IDD funds towards economic development and towards our own organizational sustainability. So there's some real frank conversations to have with our partners and amongst ourselves, and this is going to be super compressed. I'm going to, Eric, Greg, Abigail, do you have anything to add to this before I ask commissioners if they have any other questions?
I guess I would just clarify, just so everybody knows, setting the resolution for the IDD, it will be for the following year.
Yes.
In January. Just so everybody knows that. And then the other piece with the bonding and getting it, you know, just in time for going out to bid, that doesn't have to match exactly because, you know, they're going to do work and then they're going to bill us, so, you know, within a month.
Yeah, okay.
Good. And the bonding can take up to 3 months, but doesn't have to take 3 months.
Okay, great. Yeah.
I would just add that with respect to the North Jetty, that we're going to try to maximize our funding request to the maximum allowed, which is a little bit north of $1.4 million. That's with a pretty small match on our end of the bargain. We actually have until probably August of this year to kind of refine that application. But there's only 10 to 12 million available nationwide in that program. So it's going to be highly competitive and there are no guarantees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think one thing, Sam, I have a question of.
Yeah.
So we are going to adopt the resolution here in September.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you have this MOU ramping up towards an MOU with the city. I'm not sure. I mean, okay, so this is the go switch here. What if this all goes sideways? I mean, we're not going to pull. We can't pull a switch at that point. I'm not sure why this is so critical in terms of our path. Not saying that we won't get to it, but it's not like you're going to rebuild Point Hudson and have some new income stream happening in order to meet an assessment of are we or are we not going to adopt this resolution.
Yeah, I don't see these two as being as critically linked as I see these two critical linked, that we actually have particularly have this on a critical path over to here, that before we go out to bid, that we actually have a income scenario for Point Hudson as general that shows us that we're actually going to be able to service these bonds that we're going for.
Right.
Yeah. Now, this, if you use more of the IDD, you know, that could be your servicing of a portion of the bond, and then it becomes the policy question of in your limited pot of, you know, $12.6 million, you know, do you want to use almost 25% of that on a structure that's not gonna directly bring you revenue? There are also other I don't call them long shots. I mean, you know, we are not done beating the bushes for other state and federal appropriations. There's partnerships that could potentially be brought in to where private dollars could be brought into the occasion. So there are other ways to add into that pool of available resources. And it's going to be, you know, it's going to change over time. As, you know, if we get the grant, then fantastic. If we don't get the grant, okay, we adjust. What do we have to do now? But and that's actually for the North Jetty. So okay, this won't be the last time we see this. Probably the last time we see it in this format. we'll try to compress it some and.
We're gonna get versions of this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. Yeah. And then again, this is part of what we're working with in Smartsheet so that we can, you know, these all link back to the individual projects and stuff. So we just got a whole lot of initiatives that are running on critical paths. So we're trying to link them all up so that we can keep track of them.
If we end up with some delays from the GERB folks, we have any other options to get Moll Foster, you know, up in line, even though we're waiting for that?
I have a question into a curb right now is, can we do an early start? Another option is that we would actually get them started on an early process with some funds that we wouldn't necessarily see reimbursement for. So we could put some of our you know, small amount of our own dollars in just to get them started so that we're not lagging behind. So I've been thinking about that too.
Okay. So if that does happen, you know, we certainly don't want to see that portion there that gets squeezed over
exactly.
On the other wall right over here.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. Okay. And again, won't be the last time that you see it, but I think then we can start moving on and talking about, you know, IDD and how we might frame that proceed. And I think we can probably go back to our chairs for that part. Tri-Area Industrial Park, this is based upon the eco-industrial park report that was done and modified slightly because not looking at the full build-out of a, you know, like rolled curb, full building of a business park set up, but what if there was something slightly less than that? And then the Quilcene property for, again, on the looking at the capital repair and replacement plan, boat ramp repair and upgrade, dock repair, bathroom upgrades in general, how would we keep that property functioning? These are, they are not engineering estimates. They're also not just complete wags. They're based upon some original assessments, some pretty good, I'd say, you know, order of magnitude estimates, but they're certainly not planning level estimates. They're not something that we would put into a budget at this point. Same way, you know, we have really one existing grant to apply to these projects, but we know that there are other grants out there. In particular, we know that RCO would have some funding available for improvements at Quilcene. So this is just kind of a general frame to say, if we're going to move these type of initiatives forward, then what would you as a commission be looking at? How would you message regarding the IDD? We're doing an IDD so that we can invest in these type of things. And so the first thing I want to check with you are, you know, do we have the general type of groupings of initiatives right? And is this distillation of the ideas of what we would use, not necessarily for the full term, but before an initial period of the IDD, this is what we can say with some confidence to the public. This is the type of things that we would spend these IDD proceeds on.
All these projects, this $13.1 million, what's the realistic feasible time frame in the event that all these initiatives were solidified? What's the years?
I've been thinking a lot about that, and some of it is you know, that old triangle of, you know, fast or time quality or what's called time with the triangle. Money. Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, that depends on, like, if you want to do it faster, it's going to cost more money, and particularly in the bringing on additional staff or consultants to really manage these projects. So currently, our capacity to take on this level of capital investment is limited because you're looking at it, you know. The jetty is going to be a big project, and the investments that we have to do in our own yard are going to be big projects. They're going to take a lot of the existing staff time. We are looking at could the IDD proceeds pay for, you know, project managers, capital managers, and you know, whether that can be capitalized. That could then bring additional capacity. I think that, you know, we're probably looking at some type of a 10-year time frame to do this level of effort. And then, in fact, I have this spreadsheet here that looks at a 10-year time frame that I purposely left the lower one blank because I really want to have this conversation with you as the legislative body of what are the priorities for moving things forward. So, and I purposely put the top two in there because, you know, we are proceeding with the jetty, and we have to make some business investments in our boat haven property in order for us to really be in the long term sustainable for both our organization and our tenants.
And those top two is $8.5 million just in those two.
Mm-hmm. So, back to this sheet.
We're back to the $8.5 million though, because that's without the existing grants or the potential grants in there. So, In other words, right. it's 8.5 minus whatever additional lines we get for it.
Mm-hmm. So we'll look at back this sheet, and it really, and I cannot stress enough how rough these numbers are, but I think it gives us some hope about implementation of the IDD. So, as you know, the original authority for the IDD was that you could only collect it for a 6-year period. The authorization was changed, I think almost 2 years ago now, to then say you can then calculate that amount, but then you can spread that collection out over time. So that's where these two bookends are of if you collected the full amount for 6 years, or if you collected the full amount over a 20-year period. These numbers will absolutely change. First of all, they're based upon the valuation of our base year. So our base year would be 2017, and I don't think the assessor has the county full valuation out yet. I think
they have 16-17 now.
Do they?
Okay. Yeah, so it's 4.89.
Okay, so it is up a little bit. We'd have to do the math of what, but we're going to be in, you know, somewhere between 12.6 and $13 million of what the full proceeds could bring us. So if we look at that, you know, if the commission said, you know what, we have so many capital needs, we want to use our full authority and go for a 45-cent per 1,000 levy rate. What that would look like in terms of how that would show up on people's property tax bills. And so for a $200,000 home, you know, annual levy rate of $90 breaks down to $750 a month, all the way up to a $750,000 home, which would break down to, you know, slightly less than $30 a month. The actual calculation of median home price, there's a lot of opinions out there of what the median house price is in Jefferson County. Ranges anywhere from, you know, what I was looking at. And I think our like what we officially count on that.
I think the U.S. Census end of, I think 2015 was 285.
Which is kind of how I originally looked at it. I think in looking at current listings and what listing companies and the MLS and things, they would place that much higher. But that's really based upon listings and not actual the whole housing stock. But use $300,000 as an example of what the median home price would be. And in that case, looking at a $135 annual assessment would break down to about $11 per month for a median household. We then look at how we would amortize that out over 20 years. And this is because then we get into, what's the 1%, what are the new home construction values, you know, it depends upon what the commission would set the initial levy rate at, because then that affects what your 1% would be. So these numbers are not going to be static, but I think this gives you a ballpark idea that for a median home, if you were to take our full levy amount and spread it out over 20 years, then, you know, the annual levy for a median house would be in the neighborhood of $42. So that's just to give you some context to think about what, you know, how this would show up on people's tax bills.
And so just so I'm clear, the difference between the 6-year and the 20-year is that if we went the 6-year, we'd get more cash quicker, and then we wouldn't perhaps not the bond for the
exactly.
You know,
it'd be a much more efficient use of money for the court. And by that I mean that there are very real, even though interest rates are still low in the bonding market, just the process of bonding costs quite a deal. So the
the actual dollars that you could put towards a project would be much higher at collecting it over a short time frame.
Yeah, so I guess my real question is if we did the six-year one, would that then make it so we wouldn't have to bond at all? Or would we still have to bond a little bit, which would then incur some additional costs, and then that would make the difference between the six-year and the 20-year less because it's just a little bit less bonding versus more. Another, or would we be able to completely eliminate bonding if we went 6 years?
I don't know if I can answer that question right now because some of it depends upon how we do our six-year capital plan. I think for the key components, it is very possible that you could then do the jetty project if you would choose to dedicate all of your IDD money to the jetty, knowing that it's not going to produce revenue, then you could probably get by without bonding for that. And that then is a policy decision as to, you know, is that the best use of the IDD monies to put into that non-revenue producing asset?
How about on the 20-year, kind of what we were talking about at the commission meeting, the last commission meeting, we can up the rate early and then spread it out.
Yes, you do have the ability to change the rate over time. There are some things to consider in that, particularly what is your initial rate, because then that sets what any 1% increase might be on your capacity and how that would grow over time. But you could set your authorization to be able to take it, then you indicate what your initial rate would be to the assessor, and then each subsequent year we then go back to the assessor and say this is the rate that we want. Now that
we
is
could go both ways. We could go down.
You could go down. However, I think that, you know, say for example, if you're using that bonding, this levy capacity to bond against it, that's going to obligate the organization in some ways to keep that levy rate as it is. And that is, so if you are looking at, you say, okay, we want to build X and we know that we have this levy, we're going to collect it over 5 years, and you go out and you purchase a bond for that, then you're going to obligate the organization to keep that in place. Does that make sense? That following that note there. It's you need to be a good borrower. Yeah. But yes, you absolutely have the ability to go up and down with the rate.
So what you're looking for today is some sort of direction to undertake the process.
And indeed, as well as seeing a discussion amongst yourselves so that where each of you individually and where are we going to go with this capacity? Is there more of an inclination to, you know, we have a lot of needs in the near term, and we could use all this capacity, or let's identify just a certain amount, and we'll set the rate according to that. That's what I'm looking for as well. Is just saying kind of where each of the individual commissioners are in, because I have gathered that there is some consensus from the commission about authorizing the authority. That is, while you haven't taken official action on that, that seems to be where you want to go. What I'm less clear about is, you know, what is the collective decision of the commission of how much we want to gather over what period of time.
And my own assessment, we don't have enough information yet to give you a good enough answer on that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't know what we're going to get for grants. We really don't have a bid number yet that's firm.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I guess just for myself, we're all property owners in this room. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the farther you can spread out the pain here, the better it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would like, I guess personally, I would like to see that happen over trying to do something like the max to period of time if possible.
I agree with Pete on the making the pain as little as possible, but I also I think that we were talking about what to do with it. I think that I'm really buoyed up by the changes I've seen as far as revenue generation here at the port, which I think we haven't really seen a lot of the results of yet because it's still so new. And so I think that utilizing the IDD to do stuff that we need that we could be possibly potentially paying for capital improvements and stuff that could come from increased revenue would kind of take away from the original intent of IDDs, which was to figure out something that has a marginal land and then build something that's an economic development thing upon it. So I'm thinking that we want to really include the economic development to the rest of the community as an integral part of this IDD. And to me, I think that we've bumped up against this so many times that there's lots of good ideas that we can have if we had infrastructure at the... I like the new area, the Tri-Area, new name, Tri-Area Industrial Park, you know, but that always seems to be the stumbling block, as was pointed out by a constituent. And so I think that getting that going and then realizing that all the IDD funds won't be taken up just by what's on here because we have the potential, while we have the potential, but the reality of grant funding coming in to supplement it. So then, in other words, once we get the thing started, then I think that the true intent of what I envision the IDD to be is the economic development, new economic development, could be realized by, because now we have the infrastructure in there so we can do something fun and we'll have the funds available at the end to do it because of the parts that have come in with grant funding.
Well, what about looking at it from the standpoint of coming to a collective decision to identify what percentage, if we say we went with a full rate at 6 years and come to a collective agreement on what percentage of that would be dedicated for economic development and be set aside and not used for these projects and this deferred maintenance that we're talking about.
I'd like to add one more thing as you talk amongst yourselves into the mix is that IDD proceeds can be used to pay off currently debt, so they can be used to lower our debt ratio now. They can also be banked. And so they do all need to be used on capital projects. I think it's very helpful in building the trust between the community and the organizations that it can't be used on ongoing operations. They must be used on capital projects, but they can be banked, but they can also be used to pay down debt.
Sometimes you've said that we can't use our revenue bonds on breakwater because it's not revenue generating, but we do charge for mortgage. And if there is no breakwater, there is no mortgage.
Indeed, that is the case. And so, I think my statement is somewhat simplified and something that we'll need to, as we bond council, clarify that. That is absolutely the case. It's not as if there is not revenue being produced on the class of assets that is the whole property.
Which would affect the picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep.
I agree with Brad. We should probably try to figure out how much we're going to do goes where, but there's a lot of unknowns in here that we need to kind of see if we can get a little bit better handle on before we start doing that, because we really don't know that. While the other sources is all blank, and there are some other sources, it'd be kind of good to identify that. And that we have some, well, for example, with grant funding available from USDA for feasibility for industrial park and so on. So I guess if we were to be able to put a few more numbers in there in the the existing grant potential grant and other sources, that would be able to more accurately do.
Right. And that is absolutely that, you know, what we do as part of an ongoing capital program is that we're always looking out at what projects are coming out at us, you know, what are the funding sources matched against this. On the critical timeline, you know, we are going to need to be able to present a capital budget to you that looks at next year. That's the portion of that you actually adopt. Then you look at the next 5 years after that. That's always in flux, always has a change in, and we'll have some idea in there, but we will not get to that level of certainty on this critical pathway. You know, we're just not going to know about the big tier two grants. We likely will not know about USDA grants. You know, those are things that we as an organization will always continue to pursue, but we're not going to have that level of certainty that matches up with this timeline.
It seems to me our bond council is kind of critical to your discussion. We really need to know what our capacity is right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we need a little bit of definition in terms of that revenue question,
mm-hmm,
as well,
mm-hmm,
to determine our cash flow.
Well, in the meantime, regardless of what our capacity is, I mean, today they're going to need some direction.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, we don't need to determine the 6 or 20 year today. We just need to say we're ready to go on this, right?
That is true. We can look at, what we would need direction in regular session would be on, we're going to proceed with IV. We need to have the findings and develop the resolution, but we don't need to actually set the rate until we get to actually do the resolution. Am I correct with that?
I think that's correct.
Yeah.
So are you looking, like Brad was saying, are you looking for us to give you a percentage today of, let's set aside 30% of all proceeds towards?
I guess I'm looking for, one, you know, again, in regular session, yes, staff go proceed with this. I guess I'm taking some temperatures as to what your feelings are for, you know, setting the initial rate and over what the collection period are. And I'm also looking for more discussion on what our priorities are. And I'm hearing from, you know, Commissioner Tucker, I'd like to see, you know, tri-area, something being developed there sooner in the priority. Commissioner Kleinfelder, let's make sure that we are, designating a certain percentage of this towards new economic development. I would point out that investments that we make here in the boatyard are likely going to be one of the most efficient ways to fulfill our mission of increasing minimum wage jobs and having our own financial sustainability. It's just there's lots of investment that we can do here in this property to get a pretty good return. All of this is, you know, the capital facilities plan, capital budget, you know, all these in interplay along with our long-term cash flow. And it's always a work in progress.
Yeah, I'd just like to say, as far as the bonding capacity, we won't be able to know that until, you know, we finish the 2016 annual report, which we're due by the end of the month. But that said, it's not going to vary that much. If anything, I would expect it to go up, partly because we've paid down debt, you know, in the time period since we last got that assessment, and partly because revenues are going to be going up. They're going up. They went up in 16. So, and that's what they'll base their assessment on. Mm-hmm. So, they won't vary that much. If anything, they'll go up a little bit.
Frank, Eric, you have things to add into this discussion?
Uh, know it, but then just to say it, I think by the time we get to the point of adoption of the resolution, that will be directing at least the first levy period. So it's not merely establishment of the district.
Right. Yeah.
And our best guesstimate of the cost of the South Jetty right now is 3.8.
Certainly for purposes of pursuing grant monies, that was kind of the number that was used. Again, we have an estimate from Coast and Harbor, not McDonald, that was prepared about a year ago that we've updated for inflation and then projected ahead to the start year next year. And it's in that ballpark.
What was their estimate?
I don't know off the top of my head for the South Jetty as a standalone. I'd have to have the spreadsheet in front of me. But again, it's important to realize that those numbers, were very much kind of refined planning level estimates. They're not. They're absolutely not the level of accuracy that one would expect when we're at 90% design. And I remain kind of fabulously hopeful that number might come down. I don't know.
And a lot of that is going to be driven by market pressures of because we are affected by the Puget Sound market, absolutely. And while the cranes are different, there's sure a lot of cranes over in Seattle right now. So
yeah, we're really at the top of the market right now. The marine construction companies are exceedingly busy. And so I think one of the things that we would be looking to our engineer for is some value engineering as we get towards 90-100% design. Try to see if there's some cost efficiencies that might be attained. In particular, if you've got Manson barges or whatever, for instance, heading north to the San Juan Islands on a project, there might be some opportunities to stage and sequence things that would give us the biggest bang for the buck. So we'll be looking to our engineer to work with prospective contractors who are maybe too busy to bid to help noodle through a little bit of that.
Well, material costs are going to be here. It is a really wild card.
Yeah.
Who knows what's going on with our government and trade. So on steel, could be double what it is when we start this project. That could easily happen.
We also have some fabrication lead times on these. I think they're not necessarily on the critical path for this, but we do have some fabrication lead times to happen. I'm trying to. Last time we looked at general obligation bonding capacity, I would say it was in the $2.2 million range.
That was 1.7.
1.7.
Yeah.
So,
but like I said, that'll have gone down.
Yeah.
Because we paid down, and this is one of the big 2 years, 17 and 18, where we've got a really large debt service.
So
it'll actually go up, our ability to bond more.
For the GOs,
And so
actually, the 3.5, because it's 3.5 and 1.7 for 5.2.
Okay.
The 3.5 was revenue, and that was for the jetty.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Me personally, I don't consider maxing out our bonding capacity for one project. I don't consider that an option. That would be irresponsible, in my opinion.
Right. But as I understand it, from what you're just saying here, we could. We could bond a lot of this project and then go with a lower rate on the IDD. Is that correct? It doesn't seem like we would need to use the max rate of the IDD if we put more of our bonding capacity in the paying for itself, Jenny?
If you bonded against the IDD levy.
Right.
Then, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You could spread it out for
you. You could, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Kind of the, and that's one bookend. The other bookend is that, you know, it'd be right around $2.1 million or so if you did the maximum amount. And so if you institute that for the first year, you could use those proceeds to pay for a good portion of it. So it's a matter of when do you want to bring the money in, you know, how efficient is that versus the kind of the impact to the taxpayers.
You just look at your cost of capital over time.
Yep.
It's like my house.
Yep.
Yeah. Do you want to extend it out? Make sure you
have
a lower payment, but you can pay a lot more interest over time.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then this is a pretty conservative, so the concept here is pretty conservative. So we don't know if there's going to be other sources. The potential grant you can't really bank on. We don't know.
Yep.
You know, there's not a percentage like a weighted. But we do know the existing grant, and we do know we get the IDD money. As we bring in other funding from wherever, whatever source, it doesn't matter whether it's operating revenue or whether it be if we get, we go out for another LTGO or we do whatever we do down the road, you know that whatever you base this on is pretty conservative. It's just a sliding scale for funding,
right?
So if we crank up operating revenue, we do really, really well, great. But you can go in and you can say, okay, we're going to go out and we're just trying to control our costs for the cost of capital. But we know that we're committed to this project. But what else do we want to commit to? You know, what percentage? So this is kind of like, okay, worst case scenario in a sense, most conservative, we are committed to trying to replace the jetty to preserve Point Hudson and Fort Townsend. And then what we do want to make sure that we're spending a certain amount of it towards revenue that's going to generate additional, you know, or we're going to fund investments that are going to generate additional revenue in other areas as well, like the bookkeeping, for example, where you're probably going to get a good bump, get a decent return, right? So from here, I just look at it as kind of an either like in a portfolio or sliding scale. Here forward, then the more successful we are in terms of generating operating revenue, it just takes pressure off of this, but you have that funding. You know, it's kind of like I have a line of credit. I don't use the line of credit, but I have that line of credit. If you borrow it, you have it at the bank. You have it at probably potentially one of the lowest costs of capital you're ever going to see in our lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, this goes back to my folks when they were young, you know, when they borrowed, you know, potentially. So, you just look at the cost of capital. There's a risk with just stay at, you know, 0% interest rates or whatever we have, or 3%. So I think that's what, you know, I think it's a good time to decide to do that. And I think the longer that we wait, if you're decisive about it, we reduce our risk in some ways because you don't have the volatility that you just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Roll with all the costs. Right?
Yeah. And I would. Particularly concur with that on if we think about the initial use of IDD proceeds, not just for the levy, but for our boatyard, and you know the opportunities that we're seeing there, and the ability to really leverage these funds into income producers and job producers. That's where my mind goes. Like, you know, we could do a lot of improvement for how we are operating our boatyard and what kind of markets we can attract in with an injection of the capital funds early on. That sets us up for a much longer, you know, success trajectory.
And it's totally different if you have the cash.
Mm-hmm.
In the bank, you know, then you just have to make sure that you're gonna spend it wisely.
Mm-hmm.
But then you know, timing is such a huge portion of success. Mm-hmm. You can decide, like, you know, I wait until I can buy at a really competitive rate, or there's an opportunity which everybody is unanimous on. Okay, this is a really superlative opportunity to do something, you know, Bohemian or wherever. There's a really great business opportunity. But all of a sudden you're in a totally different seat, right? We all know that. You have cash in your pocket and you go, okay, it doesn't mean you have to spend it.
Right. Right. I say that at the just to, as if this weren't complicated enough, the one of the funding packages that is being discussed in Libya right now in funding ongoing educational needs is that the state would pay a they would in essence pay for some of the local levy cost to local school districts. And so when somebody gets their tax bill for next year, it is possible that you know they would see a decrease in the local school levy, and that while there might be an increase for the poor, their overall tax bill may not have gone up. I don't know if I said may enough times in there because it is really like crystal balling into Olympia, but that is absolutely one of the things that's in conference right now is that a market decrease in the local school levy obligations. That's one of the proposals there.
And would that actually decrease existing levies that are currently enforced, or would that just decrease it?
Current ones. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. And if I could predict the outcome of that one, boy, I'd be fortune telling or something. but it seems that it's one of the leading kind of deals in conference right now. It's a lot. I mean, for this size of organization, the path that we're trying to chart, I just want to kind of give us all a moment to say this is pretty complicated, and we're going to have to make decisions based upon incomplete information or lacking perfect information, and that is, you know, we're just going to need to chart a course with the information that we have.
Well, that's what a projection is.
Yeah. Yes, as I tell people, you always have to make decisions with imperfect data. Sometimes it's more imperfect than others.
Good.
Okay.
Any comments?
So let's finally turn to again, and I have we have this just for your convenience, kind of what the process will be for IDD and what the decision points are. So again, providing staff direction today and giving this direction on what the boundaries of the IDD might be in regular session. Then staff has a lot of work to do, and then we bring it back to you for public hearing and adoption. With all these other things, too, we, again, in order to all that compressed time in there, it makes sense not to hit organizations cold with it, means that we're going to fill up your dance cards here pretty quickly with, you know, meetings with city council members, probably getting you out to, you know, Rotary and chamber lunches, those kind of things. So Kimberly's been working on a calendar. She's going to be reaching out to you to set those things up, provide you with, you know, information that what we're thinking is kind of we'll kind of break up the city council and you can, you know, meet with them and we'll give, you know, okay, Steve, you meet with these two people, and we'll work to set those meetings up, provide you with some material so that you can, you know, let people know what the process is, you know, and those are going to be iterative, you know, along the way, probably more than one meeting. We also need to hear from you of other key stakeholders that we really need to be reaching out to, both as staff and as elected officials. So a lot of this helping to get people thinking on the same page at least is, you know, we're gonna kind of assign to you as elected officials. Are there
other things on the calendar that we were thinking about yesterday?
Well, I just added the county commissioners based on Commissioner Tucker's comments and stakeholders such as the board of directors for Northwest Maritime Center and then Rotary Club. So the list can continue growing.
Yeah.
For commerce, not limited. So.
Yeah. PDA probably be the Fort Worth PDA probably another one, just so we can kind of know what they're doing in the marketplace, what Hudson might do in the marketplace. We'll be reaching out to other folks to see who we should be coordinating with. But does that sound like a plan?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have a question on your identifying marginal lands. Are we on the border? Actually going to take it all the way to the ocean?
And
have you given that some thought?
Yeah, so the IED, I would recommend that we do it coinciding with the county boundaries, even though we don't have assets and we don't do things currently out on the west end. And I just think it'd be, because you're going to The levy would be assessed at for the entire county. I think it just makes some sense to have the IBD boundary for the entire county.
But the boundary kind of has to be established based on what you're going to do with the fund. I mean, if we're not going to do anything out there, why would we go all the way out there?
Well, think about this. I mean, what about including the PUD in some collaboration? Because, you know, from an economic standpoint, I mean, there's, you know, we've talked about the, you know, thing that and so on a lot over the last couple of years, and maybe there would be some direction, you know, so I think we should include Kimberly.
Put it in right there, yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I'm not against it, I'm just saying we give it some thought.
Yeah, absolutely.
Most of our county's mountains. So.
Yes, indeed, and how many residents do we have out there? Somewhere between 180 and 350. So.
We have that many? No.
It's something on there. Eric, do you know how many people are out on the west end?
About 900.
What?
About
900. 900? Is that many? I'm surprised by that. We will be working to schedule. We're going into regular session this afternoon. Again, we'll come back with some other iterations for you. We're already looking at a capital plan for this next coming budget cycle. You know, it's ever leaping process.
Cool. And as far as today, you don't need to hear from us right at the moment. You need
no.
To have a regular session.
No. Okay. Exactly.
We got a couple of comments. We've taken a couple of comments. Bertram?
It's tremendous amount of work. I spent an hour with the county assessor on the IDD and learned a lot about the information. I think you need to be honest that you can say there's $130 for a trip. Home, but you're already paying $60. So you're talking about 20 cents on a dollar plus 45 cents on a dollar, which, if you took the full amount, would be $3 million a year in increased rent property tax going into the port for the $1 million. And that's a big chunk of change. To use that to build a bridge to nowhere, such as, would be a very, very unpopular, such as Tri-City, could be a bridge to nowhere without entrepreneurs, as you pointed out. Port's track record has not been really great on some of its investments. For example, the administration building a home run. It turns out it was $300,000 you need to put in to the administration building just to keep it going. So you have to be very careful with that. And, of course, there's a great deal of criticism and fake news that the port was, that the moorage tenants were not paying for the marina. Well, that turned out with the fake news because it was probably one of your best investments. So if you're going to invest $500,000 or even $1 million
in quilting without any return, you're going to have even more criticism. So it is a slippery slope. I would have so many comments.
You got a minute, Bertram.
I know. I wish I had more time. I spent 3 years trying to have a meeting with you, but it's impossible. But I will tell you that... you got these clusters here now for a minute. But you have problems, and if I can't express it here, I'll express it in the paper.
Thanks for your time. Melinda?
Sorry.
Melinda.
You don't look like Melinda. He just said it was baloney. If you don't invest in the rest of the county, you have some very happy people. And just investing here in court, I support it if it generates jobs and income for court, but it can't just be for Townsend. And it still annoys me to no end that you're called the Port of Port Townsend when you really should be called the Port of Jefferson County. And if you're going to go out with an IDB, everyone living in the county has to pay, so why not have the entire county with the IDB so that there's some potential in the future of actually doing some good out of the county? That's it.
Thanks. Bill?
Abigail, so just I'm trying to kind of get a scale of things. So can you give us a wild, educated guess about if you just counted the water-dependent businesses or income in Point Hudson, what's the annual net income from Point Hudson for just water dependent, like the boatyards and the slips and that kind of thing. Do you have a wild guess about what that might be?
I would not give a wild guess. No, I'm not big on wild guesses.
Yeah, I'd rather do wild guesses. In my short tenure with her, I've learned that.
Okay, well, it would be interesting to know. I mean, I'm trying to think, you know, with sea level change coming, is there a race to pay off the jetty or receive that return on that investment in the jetty before the whole, you know, Water Street becomes Venice of the West? Becomes Water Street.
That's what I have for assignment.
I recognize that Point Hudson is a critical asset to the community, and I just wondered if the community feels like, I mean, it sounds like the indications we got a lot from the city and the county as well as the port's problem. But it's not just the port's asset in terms of its cultural economic benefit. So,
yeah. Hey, Bill, a few years ago, the EDC did a benefit analysis, what that means for that local community. It's a good read. If you want a copy of it, I can get one for you.
Yeah, great, thanks.
I would note, too, that, again, meeting regularly both with Jake and David Timmons, the city manager, and working collaboratively towards, you know, what this planning process might be, and recognizing that we all have a shared interest in the future of Point Hudson. And so, things get said in papers and on radio shows that can, you know, be... and indicate whatever, but I think that certainly the city and the Maritime Center understand that their fates are intertwined with the fate of Point Hudson and are, you know, stepping up to participate in the planning process and
I think we, we're building a partnership and a relationship and at the staff level, and we're going to do that even more at the elected level.
Jake, just kind of building on that. First of all, compliments to all of you for this sort of deal with planning. I appreciate that, especially from one of the organizations that does try to catalyze one of your assets for that sort of community benefit. One request in there, we are not the most critical of your path, nor is that event the most critical of your path. But it would be great if we could know earlier than the festival this year, if demobilization to allow a 2018 and 2019 festival is not possible based on the economics of it, so that we can use that one sort of, we connect with these people once a year often. They come from all over the place. So if it's not going to happen or we need to move it somewhere else for a couple of years, it would be great to be able to use that event to communicate that. Again, not your biggest critical path, but it would be nice to have that considered in your planning process.
Yeah.
Thanks. Brian, did you have your hand up?
I didn't. No. Okay. But just concurring with the discussion here today, good about creating jobs and really leveraging the maximum efficacy of this revenue source.
Yeah. Cool. Berger?
I was able to collect my thoughts.
Yeah.
Two things. The IGD can be repeated. So you could take 45 cents on 1,000 for the next 6 years and then do it again. Because you're coastline, you could actually do it three times. So it's not like you are boxing yourself in by the amount you can take. And also, Jeff, the county assessor, checked that you could start off at 20 cents, and you're not limited by increasing it by $1 a year. You can go to any amount at any time to raise the fee. So you can do that.
I thought that you're right. And you mentioned the 1%.
Yeah.
I don't know quite what you're referring to.
It's that you absolutely can do that. It's that then, and this is still Department of Revenue, as I understand, is still making rule about this, then is the levy amount subject to the 1% increase so that we could employ that over time? And if that is the case, then it will be based upon the initial levy rate. So that's my understanding, though. I will tell you there is still rulemaking going on with this. Mm-hmm. So we'll continue to stay connected with the assessor on that.
And the second thing that is, you talk about economic development and jobs, but we need to have some data on just how many jobs you really have created for the million dollars which has been put into the port from the property tax for a number of years now, and see whether you actually are creating jobs. And if jobs is the real benchmark for economic development. So I would like to see you have a workshop and really define what you mean by economic development.
All right, well, we'll adjourn our workshop and meet again at 1 o'clock for a regular session. Thank you.
Awesome.